Thanks for downloading the Overdrive podcast. If you're on Instagram, make sure you follow us at TSN1050. If you're not, sign up and follow us, even if it's the only account that you follow. Because if you're a big fan of the show, you've got to know what's going on behind the scenes. On Instagram, at TSN1050.
This is the home of Jerry's percentages.
Tiger used to love the West Coast swing. He's got the same nickname as Nick Foles. You know what I mean.
This is Overdrive on TSN 1050, the official voice of the Leafs.
Happy Family Day to everyone out there. Noodles is working, but he's down in Nashville. He's not on the show. He's calling the hockey game tonight.
Wonder what he got into last night. Probably some Tootsie's action?
I would assume he's playing the role of Jimmy Butler today. Noodles flew in, had himself an afternoon slash early evening in Nashville, maybe even went out for lunch earlier today, had himself a liquid lunch, but he'll be ready. He's a pro tonight.
He's got to work tonight.
He'll be a pro. He'll be fine.
So you would support a guy going out for a liquid lunch, a nap, and then go to work?
If it's like a beer or two, why can't he do that?
Yeah, I agree. Give me the charger, bud.
The one that I'm using?
No, the other one over there.
Oh.
All right, Steve Phillips will join us here in a moment because there's more news coming out of spring training down in Dunedin. And today it was Josh Donaldson's chance to speak with the media. And he said, listen, man, we're not really moving towards a contract the way things are going right now. And
why don't we hear that audio?
Well, we're going to play some of it in just a minute. We'll play one of the primary clips, the big clip. What do you need audio? You couldn't stop talking in the 4 p.m. hour.
I want to hear what the man has to say. The guy in his car wants to hear what Donaldson said.
All right, right? Let's hear what Donaldson had to say
the whole thing
earlier today.
They've been very good with the communication process, but we just aren't eye to eye at this moment. And I've talked to Ross, and I explained to him that I think it'd be best just to kind of shut that down for right now. And because I'm going to continue to say this, but I feel like it's best for me to focus on myself and focus on this team. And because that's what I know that's going to help us win games.
Just to make sure we're not kind of putting words in your mouth here, but it sounds like your expectation is to hit free agency in the offseason at this point.
Yes. But that's not saying that talks between the Blue Jays and I won't ramp up again at some point.
Yep.
Because I believe they will.
There you have it. Donaldson.
Why not just go full Phil Kessel? Say, start of the season is my drop-dead date. If you don't get it done by then, I'm going to free agency, so suck on that one. That would be my move as a player.
I'd do that, too, if I was a player.
It would scare the hell out of me if I blew my knees out, but I'll just say I finished the year strong. I'm going to rinse you and just...
The problem with that is Edwin Encarnacion did that, and now he's playing in Cleveland. Now, the Indians are a really good team.
For less money than that was offered by the Blue Jays.
That's right. And, you know, that was on him and his agent, and they obviously screwed that whole process up. And the Blue Jays have to take some responsibility. But from that standpoint, I would assume if you're Donaldson, you have to believe if you're going to be playing a game of chicken with Shapiro and Atkins, based on the way they reacted to Encarnacion's statement, they'd probably say, okay, we'll talk at the end of the year. Like, they're not going to be stronghold into doing anything.
Well, and it didn't work for Jose either. I know
he performed so horribly.
Situation, but
Bautista, like, Donaldson's not going to perform the way Bautista did, though, when he was going into his contract year.
No. But, I mean, at the time, you didn't see Bautista dropping off a cliff like that either.
No.
Like, what was he asking? Like, 5 for $125 was the reported number?
Well, the report was more than that. It was $30 million a year. It was over $150 over five.
Imagine they sign that.
Well, and that's a perfect example of why you have to be careful as a fan yelling and screaming, hey, give the player what he wants. He's my favorite player. I love that guy. You have to realize it doesn't work that way, and you have to be more analytical than that. You have to be more even-keeled. You can't just give a superstar player whatever he wants whenever he wants it, or else you get a scenario like Bautista's where he could be walking into year three of a $150 million contract, and the guy can't play.
Do you know what I learned my lesson with that was David Price. I was like on that bandwagon. They got to sign him. He was so good. They need an ace. And then
how's that worked out?
Half a season with the Red Sox. I'm like, okay.
And he's got an opt out after 3 years, I believe. There's no way he's
what
opting out of that contract.
Being involved in pro sports is you can't fall in love with the star player because I saw it with Carolina. They were like, when Keith Primeau left and went to Philly, I'm like, we're never going to win without that guy. And they won the Stanley Cup without myself, him. You don't need him. We got Steve on because I want the first question.
All right. We've got our TSN Jays and baseball analyst Steve Phillips on the line. Go ahead.
Steve, Marcus Stroman probably has a question. He plays for an organization that makes a lot of money. He considers himself the ace, which he is. He's the opening day starter. So his question to the organization, maybe you can answer, is why are you taking this guy to arbitration? Is it just because it's a tool that in management you have to use it? But he's thinking, I'm one of your best players. Why are you doing it to me?
Yeah, the arbitration process in and of itself is set up for a confrontation, right? I mean, it becomes a statistical comparison.
But why do they want to do it with him?
Well, they don't want to do it, but they have a policy. Look, the player has a role in this, right? I mean, the player has, you know, two sides participate in negotiations. And the Jays have a policy that says if you file numbers, we go to trial. And what that is, it's a motivation to get a deal done before filing numbers for arbitration and understanding that if we do file, we're going to go to a hearing. We're going to have to battle it out. So both sides have a part in that. Now, I didn't have that philosophy. I didn't have that policy in place. So I would file, and sometimes you file a number if you think you're going to go to trial, which is a little bit higher from the team perspective because you want to be able to argue the midpoint. And if you move the midpoint up, you got a better case in it. Or sometimes you file the settle where you come in a little low, but you try to find some middle ground to get a deal done. And I always made a deal. I never took a player to arbitration, yet I never overpaid, never had anybody in the commissioner's office say, man, you went too far in this. No other team was upset by a deal. Now, the Jays aren't alone. A lot of teams have this policy, file and trial, but, you know, the risk you run is this, that you alienate one of your star players, and that's unfortunately what they've done. Now, Stroman sort of backed off of that. And now it's talking multi-year deal, but look, it still feels like they're a bit of a ways away from not even coming close.
So today, Donaldson comes out with his comments about they're not even close, and he expects to go to free agency. What do you make of his comments?
Yeah.
And yeah, is that basically something that's going to happen?
Yeah, I think that it's very likely going to happen, and I think both parties kind of knew it. Because if I were the Blue Jays and I really wanted to sign Josh Donaldson, mm-hmm. I would have made the offer in November to find out where we were to be able to say, okay, let's get him locked up so we can go out and try to sign some free agents for 3 and 4 years down the road. They didn't do that. They didn't even ask the question until last week or have the conversation about where are you with the kind of contract. And so what they did is they went out and signed a bunch of one-year options to play around Donaldson. I think the Blue Jays didn't want to ask any questions because they knew the answer. And the agent knew that the team was one of the analytics-driven clubs that doesn't believe that older players could get long-term contracts. And it was kind of an on-starter. What Donaldson said today was effectively that we're not really anywhere near it to get it going. And what that means is they didn't exchange dollars. What they asked was, how long of a deal are you looking for? And the agent said, well, what would you guys think was appropriate? Because it's up to the team to make the offer. And the team would say, yeah, you know what? Because he's going at 33, we're looking at probably a 3 or 4 year deal as an extension beyond this season. And the agent's going, yeah, we're looking at 6 or 7, maybe an 8 year deal. I know he's going to be 33. I know you think old guys fall off, but old guys aren't Josh Donaldson. And they'd sell the uniqueness of the player. And because they're at those extremes on the length of the contract, there's no reason to negotiate dollars because it's a non-starter. And I think that's effectively what Donaldson said. And Josh Donaldson sounded calm, cool, collected, unfrazzled by it at all. I mean, he seemed completely okay because I think there's been a level of acceptance for a while that the Jays weren't going to be able to get a deal done.
Do you not think for the organization, whatever the plan is going forward, whether it be a rebuild, retool, that Josh Donaldson should kind of be a part of the equation? I mean, and I know you don't care. I know as an organization, Steve, when you're a general manager, you don't care about Jeff O'Neill, the guy that goes to 3 games a year. But when I go, I want to see Josh Donaldson come to to the plate. Because I want to I think he's one of the best players in the game, and I want to see him when I go there. Does that enter the minds of anybody in that position, or is it just if he wants a long term deal, he's gone?
Yeah. I think that it does enter their mind because they kept him for this year. Like a different organization in a different time and place would have traded Donaldson in this offseason, and they would have started the rebuilding process a year early. But the Jays didn't do that because they do want to honor the fan base that has been showing up. If they can't sign Donaldson for the long term, they'll likely go into what they hope will be a quick rebuild to get things turned around, let some of the young guys start to grow. They may trade Stroman and Sanchez and some of the players they have out of control, recoup what they can, go out and rebuild like, you know, there are 10 other teams doing right now, and come back to compete. And the way they look at it is this. We can come in last place with you. We can come in last place without you. So why spend $25 million on you if we're going to come in last place? We'd rather wait and spend the money when we're ready to compete than to spend money in years where we're going to get our heads kicked in.
With Steve Phillips here on Overdrive, I found it interesting that Donaldson was referencing how slow-moving this year's free agency has been. And he's obviously been studying it. He's obviously aware of it.
Well, the dollars, Brian, are almost, it's mind-numbing to look at them compared to last year.
They're nowhere close to where they've been in the past, relatively speaking. And I also think he understands that Harper and Machado are also coming up, and they're clearly going to be sought after more than Donaldson. As much as he's confident and he's a great player, he is. These are, I think, Harper's, what, 24, Machado's 26, Donaldson will be 33. So I'm curious to get your take on this, Steve. What do you think would scare him more this offseason and how long it's taken for some guys to get paid, and then you got a guy like J.D. Martinez who's still waiting, or the fact that he will be competing in a way next year with Machado and Harper?
Yeah, it's a good question. I don't think Donaldson's fazed by this offseason. You know, and I've talked with a number of agents, and I know we're hearing a lot of rhetoric from players, and we're hearing a lot of propaganda out there, and people are pointing fingers, and, well, what are the owners doing? What's happened this offseason is a perfect storm of a lot of things happening, where, you know, the luxury tax, remember the luxury tax is a soft cap. Luxury tax has been in place since 1996, and now all of a sudden it's a soft cap, and it's not. It's just a year that because of the compelling nature of next year's free agent class, the Dodgers and Yankees want to get under the luxury tax number so that when they go over it next year, and they will, and that is the plan, they will, when they go over it next year, they will be considered a first-time offender instead of a multi-year offender, and it dramatically changes the penalties on it. The other thing is, like, Eric Hosmer is not a great player. And everybody, Eric Hosmer, boy, you should turn around. No, just because you're the best free agent in an offseason doesn't mean you should get paid like the best players in the game. Eric Hosmer, his 25 home runs last year were ranked 18th among first basemen in baseball. He's a good player, not a great player. His home runs aren't going to go up dramatically leaving Kauffman Stadium because he has the fifth highest percentage of ground balls in baseball. And everybody talks about makeup. I'm not paying you millions of dollars because you're a nice guy and you can tweet. I want you to hit home runs. And he doesn't do that. And although he won a gold glove, the analytics say he's not a great defender. So, you know, J.D. Martinez is a really good offensive player. But he's an American League player. Cannot play in the National League. National League team said, you know what, I can take you for 3 years. But after that, you're already bad defensively. You're going to be horrible after 3 years. I can't carry you beyond that. So it was a non-starter for the deal. So I don't think Donaldson stays at all by this year's Fraser class that it necessarily tells everything about money to be spent. His big challenge is going to be age. If he stays healthy all year, he can sell himself in a little bit stronger way. The only way the Blue Jays get him back is if they get him on a pillow contract. If he goes to free agency, he doesn't get what he wants. He's looking for a one-year landing spot. Maybe that's Toronto at that point. But I think that's, you know, like Batista did for the year. That's highly unlikely it's going to happen.
And as far as Donaldson going into that class next summer, I don't know if you agree with this, Steve, but I would think as a player he would almost welcome it because if some teams are in the chatter about getting a Machado or somebody like that, Donaldson could be a backup plan where they're like, we missed on that one, but we're going to get this guy instead. And as a player, that's kind of a good thing, obviously.
Yeah, here's the thing. Josh Donaldson is a much better player than Manny Machado. Look at the numbers. Look at the offensive numbers. Now, Machado's a better defender, but Donaldson's a good defender. But look at the offensive numbers. It's not even close. Mm-hmm. I think Donaldson's had 1 year less at worst than Machado's best year in his career. He's a much better offensive player. What's going to happen is Machado and listen, Machado and Donaldson have the same agent, which is going to be very interesting. Right? Dan Lozano represents both of them. Machado's going to look for a 12-year deal. He's 26. He's going to look for a 12-year deal. So is Bryce Harper. Bryce Harper's going to want to try to get as close to $500 million as he can. Both guys will get 12-year deals with opt-outs after 3 years, 6 years, 9 years, whatever, to get out of the deal. And I honestly think that some team's going to get in on it and say, listen, we can take 12 years of Machado at $400-some million, assume that risk, and we can do 5 or 6 years of Donaldson. I think Donaldson's going to have people playing in the six-year range on him next year. I really do. Don't be surprised if the Atlanta Braves and Alex Anthopoulos jump in on that.
With Steve Phillips, speaking of J.D. Martinez, it sounds as if he and the Red Sox are closing in on a deal. Those rumors have been out there for the longest time. I've been expecting it to happen at any point, and it does sound as if it's moving in that direction.
Let me put on my surprise face.
Well, you knew the Sox were going to do something, and they have, and they were the top team in the AL East a year ago. They flamed out in the playoffs. But you got the Sox who won a bunch of games and are still really good. The Yankees who won a bunch of games and are even better than they were last year. I mean, that's got to factor into the Donaldson conversation and the game plan for Shapiro and Atkins. I mean, I'm having a really difficult time trying to sell any Blue Jay fan on the idea that they can beat either one of those two teams in terms of the win column this year.
Yeah. The big question, two questions I have, is if they found out about Donaldson earlier, could they have shifted focus and direction? Could they have jumped in on J.D. Martinez and gone for a year of Donaldson, a year of J.D., let Donaldson walk, and then you got J.D. Martinez as your centerpiece offensive player to build around and keep going with this young core of pitchers? That was certainly a way they could have considered going in that direction, and you can keep winning. Or you get J.D. Martinez, you trade Donaldson in the offseason, then you go out there and get some other pieces for the $23 million you were paying Donaldson to, you know, scrub the wealth around the field and get some long-term value there. They didn't want to joke, so I really do think that they have a vision of the rebuild in Toronto. J.D. Martinez, you know, got to the point, and look, Scott Boras can scream and yell all he wants. J.D. Martinez is not a $200 million player. I thought he'd get 5 years and $120 million. That's what I thought he'd get this offseason. I didn't anticipate he's going to get. He wanted a seven-year, $30 million contract. He's not that kind of an offensive player. Or Jimmy can't play defense. So what happened was he ended up realizing, you know, you have to at some point evaluate the worst-case scenario. If the Boston Red Sox go away from J.D. Martinez, then J.D. Martinez was left with the Arizona Diamondbacks on what could be a 2 or 3 year deal. That's not anywhere close to the money that he wants. He's probably going to get about $60 million. The Red Sox go away from J.D. Martinez. They won 93 games last year without him. And they can go get Logan Morrison at 38 home runs, and they're going to be right in the middle of the American League East once again. And hopefully Scott Boras finally realized, telling J.D., I know I promised you, and I took you on as a client for this year, for this reason, I know I told you I'd get you $200 million. We're going to have to settle for about $110, $120. I'm sorry, but it was the right move to make a deal, and it's the right price for J.D. Martinez. Players aren't getting screwed. They're actually getting paid the way they should be based upon who they are, not based upon a market that Scott Boras set.
Thank you, Steve. Always appreciate it. We'll do it again soon.
Thanks, guys. My pleasure.
There's Steve Phillips, our Jays and MLB analyst. Baseball is back, man. There's a lot going on. And it does sound as if...
Wouldn't it suck to be a player when when you're up to make some hay, the gravy train stops?
Well, I think the point he made, though, is absolutely spot on. These guys, they're not getting screwed. They're finally getting paid appropriately. Because some of these deals that have been going down in the past have been crazy.
Well, think about what
and unrealistic
of Miguel,
to me.
Miguel Cabrera's deal right now.
Well, no kidding. Now Cabrera, you know, was winning triple crowns and MVPs.
I get it, but look at his deal right now.
Yeah, and it's off the charts.
It's
stupid.
Crazy.
But there have been guys over the past 5 to 10 years that got deals where you're like, "There's no way that guy should get that kind of money." Like, no way that guy should get that kind of money. And J.D. Martinez is a good example. He put up great numbers last year. And when he went to Arizona, it was absurd the amount of numbers he was putting up. But he's not Mike Trout. He's not. He's not one of the top 10 or 15 players in the league.
What is Mike Trout making right now, by the way?
He signed one of those, I think it was a 7-year deal at like decent money, very decent money, but not what you would expect. Like, he should be the highest paid player in the league.
He signed 6 years for $144.5 million.
So what is that? Like,
I don't know. Let me do the math.
$25 million a year? Like, that's a ton of money. A ton of money. But he's 24. Absolutely unanimously accepted as the best player
okay
in the game.
I think he's okay with that. I think he sleeps well.
24.
But if we're talking about Harper coming up and cashing in on like a 10 or 12 year deal close to $500 million total, Trout, doesn't if he was coming up, he should be getting that plus.
Do you feel like teams are getting smarter then? Like, I feel like we're inching there in hockey. Like, it wasn't that long ago. Like, we had the summer with Ladd and Lucic, and Clarkson wasn't that long ago. Clarkson was 5 years ago. Like, that, can you imagine it? Like, it doesn't seem like teams will do those types of things anymore, I don't think. And then
I think we're seeing that as we get closer to the trade deadline, too. Like, no one's giving up first-round picks anymore. Second-round picks, you're not even getting that
much. Well, because now teams are like, well, what am
like,
I really getting
that's what I talked about
this
last week. These asking prices for players like Evander Kane.
It's a joke.
For 2 months or 2.5 months, it is an absolute joke.
Yeah, it's crazy.
An absolute joke.
It's an absolute non-starter. If you know what you're doing, if you are a competent GM,
you
you're
this,
not paying
both
them.
Of you guys, quickly before we go to break here. If you were a GM and you wanted to bring in Evander Kane for 2 months, what would you give up? Because I know what I'd give up. A second round pick at the most.
Yeah, that's
and
exactly
that's it.
What I was thinking.
I'd probably.
I would give the finger emoji back to Jason Botterhill if he asked for anything else.
If I really was committed to him and I really liked him, I'd give a second and then like a prospect, you know, a quality prospect.
Yeah, if you thought
maybe
this guy could really
team.
Put you over the top.
Yeah, if I'm really committed to him, then I'm willing to pay because I'm not going to waste my own time if I'm really committed to him. If I'm not, I'm not even going to make the phone call. But there has to be a limit. Like, a few years ago, Cody Franson went for a first-round pick. Well, the Leafs got Cody. Got
Robin
a first
Leonard was a first-round pick. They traded a first-round pick for Robin Leonard.
At the draft. And how did that work out? James Duthie will join us in studio. We'll get his take on the Leaf weekend. We're a week out from Trade Center. Get his take on what we expect between now and then. And there's games going on. It's President's Day down in the States. So there's some hockey games going on right now. And Family Day up here. We're all enjoying it. Everyone's
loving
having
it.
A great afternoon. So Duthie will join us. Brian Stemmel, Canadian Olympian. He'll join us from South Korea in the 6 p.m. hour. We'll get back to the trivia update between the two of you. I'm going to pitch you guys against each other. And Masters will be back in here on Friday. Round 2, Masters Siegel versus Hayes O'Neill. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050. All right, James Duthie in studio, brought to you by Valiant Financial.
What is that video you sent?
I got a sponsor. The guy deleted the tweet, unfortunately. Don't you hate it when you like quote tweet something and then the tweet is deleted? So you look like
an idiot. Was that somebody drunk or what?
No, so this is the truth. This girl's name is Elizabeth Swaney. It's a remarkable story. She went to Harvard. She ran as a like 20-year-old for governor or something and lost to Arnold Schwarzenegger. So she has worked the system perfectly. She's basically a casual skier. And it is half pipe in skiing. So there's a snowboard event in half pipe, and there's a skiing event in half pipe where they do all the tricks, right? So essentially, after Eddie the Eagle, they made these rules that you couldn't have some doofus qualify just because it was he had from a country that didn't have a team. But in this particular sport, I guess there's not a ton of athletes. So she went through the World Cup circuit for the last like year, and she would always go to the events where there wouldn't be that many. So there might only be 20 athletes that go to the event, and a few of them would fall, and she just skis down the half pipe.
She survives.
She doesn't do any tricks.
No, nothing.
She just goes up and goes down. At the end, you saw she turned backwards for the last 10 yards, which any person who skied 10 times can do. And that's what she does, and so she finished 13th, 15th, 17th, 22nd, and she racked up enough points, and because of the quota system they have, you know, if certain athletes are injured and countries don't bring enough, these littler countries, they want them in the Olympics, so Hungary gets an Olympian. So here she is in the Olympic Games, this basically middle-of-the-road blue slope skier. It's insane.
I couldn't believe.
But
the
what are you
video.
Doing? Are you like? Are you trying to get the story and?
Well, you know what? She's like. She or her quotes are like, "I'm trying to inspire other people from Hungary."
No, that's you're great. Not,
it's a bit of a crock. It's an embarrassment for the Olympics.
She wants to party and be an Olympian. I wouldn't. I don't blame her. I think that's an incredible
strategy. No, it's not really her fault. It's the system's fault.
Right.
That you can't allow. Like, it's ridiculous. I was like you. I watched it and thought this was an SNL skit.
I thought it was,
and
a
the
joke.
Commentators were in on it. But
because
no,
they treated it like it was serious to an extent. They weren't laughing.
No.
Like, they weren't like, okay, let me explain this story. She's brutal. She somehow circumvented the system. This is an embarrassment. They're like, and here she comes down the half pipe. Oh, she turned.
She's turning here. She's just trying to make it clean.
That was crazy, man.
Now, probably the Olympics took down the tweet because the guy had probably used it without authorization. But if you could look it up, it's Elizabeth Swaney. And if you can find it somewhere on the internet, it's worth your time because it's the craziest thing I've ever seen.
Well,
like, I will say this, I've skied and wanted to go down a half pipe a couple times. It is scary, so I'm not saying that I could do it, but I would say 50% of everyday skiers who go to Collingwood could do what she has done
and be in South Korea right now representing a country.
Right, it's nuts, but she's at the Olympics.
Well, I was having this conversation earlier. I was at my parents' and my sisters were there, and brother-in-law's, and we were talking about, like, Jesse Lumsden is going for gold again, right? Like, he's a multi-year Olympian in bobsled.
Right.
And there's another woman, I can't remember her name, her name's escaping me, but she was a summer athlete, and now she's with Haley Humphreys, and she's a part of the two-woman bobsled team, and she only started doing it like 6 months ago. Doesn't that cheapen the Olympics a little bit?
Well, bobsled is the one sport where you just find the greatest athlete, and that's all they've ever done. Just for the push, not for the driving, but for the push, all you're doing is the strongest, fastest guy you can have. So they used to always go to the track and recruit sprinters, or in Lumsden's case, a running back, a football player, somebody who's super strong and super fast. So, because all you're pushing as hard as you can, and then you got to jump into the thing, and that's all you do.
Yeah.
So I guess that's always been the way with bobsled. You're still an athlete, though.
And those, well, I'm not disputing that, but it's still, if you started a sport 6 months ago, and now you're performing at the pinnacle of the sport, the pinnacle platform, the Olympics, and your partner is Kaylee Humphreys, who won. Didn't she win the Lou Marsh a couple of years ago? Like a great Canadian Olympian, one of the faces of Team Canada. And you're just going to jump on board, and her name's Felicia George is her name.
I think that's one of the only spots, though, left in the Olympics, is the pusher in bobsled where you could do that, where you could just go down. You know, in the old days of sliding, I remember Rick Riley wrote a piece way back from Sports Illustrated that he signed up for luge, and he was like 22nd ranked in luge in America because there was only 22 lugers. So he figured that was the best place you could go.
Yeah.
But it's probably a little bit different now. But there's still some goofiness with the Olympic Games. We know that.
How are you feeling about trade deadline? We're about a week away here.
The one thing that hasn't happened this year that actually gives me hope is that we haven't had that day. Usually it's 2 weeks before on a Thursday or a Friday where one of the guys near the top of the list gets traded. And then within hours, two more guys get traded because you're always waiting for that first domino. And that hasn't happened. Having said that, that will probably happen this week. It'll probably happen Wednesday or Thursday, middle of the afternoon, and we'll get three deals that kind of screw us a little bit. But, yeah, I'm feeling good about it. This is, honestly, out of the last 5 years, there's a lot of interesting names, and there's a few teams like Ottawa, Montreal Rangers, who seem to really want to make substantive changes. And this could be the year. You know, we always promise the blockbuster knowing there's never going to be a blockbuster. I mean, you could have Erik Karlsson or something. Who knows now with Melnyk now in the office every day, you know, as the CEO.
Who knows with so many bad teams?
That kind of wackiness could happen, which we haven't had that possibility, frankly, in 2 or 3 years of something. Stamkos, I suppose, but Yzerman made it really clear 2 weeks before the deadline last year that wasn't happening. So I think this is the first year where you could actually have something really big happen that catches us off guard, which would be fantastic.
Is Carlson the only guy you can think of, or is there another player that comes to mind?
I mean,
anyone around the table here can chime in, but
I don't think so.
I don't know.
That's like
Price.
A top five player.
Oh, John, no, I'm not saying that. That's what I'm saying. Like, could Tavares? Tavares would be that, but the Islanders are currently in a playoff pursuit.
They might end up
getting in. No,
Montreal's so stealth. Like, could they do something really big? You'd never find out about it, but
they're so stealth and so brutal at the same time.
If they do nothing, I mean, there should be protests on the streets.
Isn't it better if nobody does anything and they just hold all their cards the whole day?
Yeah, I mean, there should be a...
Yeah, but eventually a trade has to happen.
What if all the teams, nothing happened?
Why would you want
that? It'd be great for James. They could just talk about the potential...
You need something to come in at some point, right?
Yeah.
Like, Rick Nash is getting traded.
Yeah.
Vander Kane, I think, will be traded. Mike Green, you have to believe, will be traded.
Yeah. And, you know, even if stuff happens on Sunday... Trade deadline's Monday.
That's fine.
It's fine because that gives us stuff. Even if stuff happens on the weekend, if you can get it to the weekend without anything major happening, well, you know, even now we'll talk about the trades that happen this week, next week. So we're fine. Plus, we got a couple of special surprises next week, as always. So I'm looking forward to those.
Okay. Trade Center next Monday on TSN. And I think once we move beyond Trade Center, then we start talking about the playoffs and we also start talking about the lottery a little bit more. But I was looking at the standings this morning. Like you mentioned, the Habs, Montreal's third last in the league. Like Arizona and Buffalo are 100% the two last place teams in the league. They will finish 31st and 30th. I don't know which order because they're right there, but they will finish dead last in second to last. But then it goes Montreal, Ottawa, Vancouver, Edmonton. Shouldn't the lottery be a bigger conversation? Like, I don't sense that we're talking about it on a national level whatsoever.
Well, it's because we're in Toronto. I think they're talking about it a lot in Ottawa.
Do you get that sense?
Yeah, they're talking about it a lot in Edmonton.
Isn't it scary to say that Edmonton's involved in the lottery talk?
You almost not want to win the lottery if you're in Edmonton out of the shame.
Oh, I would take the shame.
You need the shame.
Yeah. Rasmus Dahlin seems to be that good, and he's a defenseman. It's what they want.
It really could happen, which is lunacy.
I know.
It's lunacy.
I know.
I think as we get closer to it because of that Canadian presence, and he really is, like, he is McDavid Matthews-esque as a defenseman, I think. He'll change the franchise that gets him. Unless it's Edmonton, they'll somehow screw it up.
Somehow they'll ruin
it. I don't know. Yeah. Isn't it funny, though, that all they talk about is a player to play with McDavid and Taylor Hall's sitting there.
Fantastic year.
I understood.
Jordan Eberle's having a fantastic year. Get rid of two great wingers, and they're like, man, I wish we had a scoring winger around here.
Well, they still need a defenseman. That's the best part. Bob Nicholson came out, didn't he? He's like, hopefully we make a move and bring in a defenseman.
But that's not all the Oilers' fault either. Like, at the time, it felt like they needed to move. It felt
the
like those
line is
those
James,
guys needed a change.
Scouting is pathetic. If you look at what they brought into that lineup, other than McDavid, what is it? Somebody tell me.
Dreisaitl. Yeah.
And they don't
Dreisaitl,
have
Ryan Nugent Hopkins, but they were first and third overall.
They don't have a ton in the system either.
Yeah.
Nurse is okay.
What have they done with their secondary picks? Nothing.
Mm-hmm.
No. Edmonton's a tire fire. They're brutal. Like, they're a really bad organization and a bad team, and they've got arguably the best player in the world, and I think the guy who will be the best player in the world for the next 10 or 15 years collectively, but I'm starting to doubt my take when they first won that lottery that they would 100% win a Stanley Cup simply because they have McDavid.
You watch them play right now. It's McDavid going around the ice 100 miles an hour trying to score a goal. And the rest is just nonsense.
Nothing.
Absolutely.
They've got
nonsense.
Nothing around him.
And you talk about locking in deals. We're talking baseball. That Lucic contract is
already awful. Dude, I said that the second they signed it. The second they signed it, that was going to be one of the worst contracts in hockey. He's 2 years in. He's not even a full 2 years in. 7 years, $6 million per for a guy who's playing basically on the fourth line.
Yeah, he's a third line. He's a hybrid third, fourth line player right now.
Just an atrocious sign. Peter Chiarelli has done such a poor job. Like, the Lucic signing was terrible.
Well, you weren't
terrible.
Saying that a year ago. A calendar year ago, you were not saying that.
I absolutely was saying that. You heard me say what
they
I said about the Lucic
They were one game away
sign.
From going to a Stanley Cup final. You
no,
weren't
they
saying
they
that
were one game away from going to a conference final. They lost in the second round to
Sorry,
Anaheim.
A conference final.
But didn't he feel like hockey changed overnight? Like, in the playoffs last year, you said, oh, this team's built for it. You know, they're big and they're tough and they have support. And then all of a sudden, this year started, and you go, this team is yesterday's team.
Right. Too big, too slow.
It's amazing. I mean, hockey, I think, was already changing, and maybe they were just too far behind on it. But they did look okay. They looked good last year for those two rounds. If you have two centers that are playing like superstars, you're fine. Mm-hmm. See Pittsburgh. But, yeah, it was like overnight, hockey passed you by, and now you're screwed.
And now you're in big trouble.
And Lucha, if it ends up, it'll end up being one of those Ottawa Phaneuf trades where if they ever move him, they'll have to bring in somebody who's just got just as bad a contract.
Right. That they'll buy out or something like that. As for the Leafs, you know, they played two entertaining games over the weekend. They lose on Saturday in Pittsburgh, but everyone's losing in Pittsburgh these days. And they bounced back with a win last night. And we didn't really get into this conversation, but you look at the top two lines, Matthews and Kadri, both have been really productive recently. The Kadri line's been the most productive. Who do you think, which line would you expect to be more productive over the final 21 games?
Well, I'll just take the Matthews line. I'll play the favorite easily because we've seen both Marner and Kadri are streaky players. Not necessarily streaky players, but streaky scorers. I think Kadri will play a string of good games and not score. Marner will play his butt off but not score for 15 games. Those guys have both shown that throughout their career, and I think they'll continue to be like that, where we haven't really seen that. From, it will make a big deal if Matthews goes, you know, six games without a goal, but I'm front-running all over that, baby.
Yeah, I think I would lean Matthews, and I'm also not fully committed to the idea that Babcock is fully committed to that Kadri.
You still think he's on the fence?
I don't think he is today. I think he likes what he sees today, but he's thrown a blender into every other line. The only one he hasn't touched is the Matthews line. And even that, sometimes he'll move Nylander around a little bit. He hasn't done it recently. But if Mitch Marner starts cheating or starts playing poorly, he'll flip him around just to send a message. And I don't think he'll do that with the Matthews line. I think he's shown he's committed to it.
Do you think there's significant underdogs against either Boston or Tampa Bay?
No.
I don't think so either.
I don't think so at all.
It's not a pick-em series. I think the other team would be favored in both. Mm-hmm. But
I think it's only one game, but they played Tampa Bay, and it's only a one-game sample size. But I think when you left that game, you're like, that team doesn't scare the hell out of me.
No.
Well, but they might not be the same after the trade deadline as they are now.
No team is.
But how much movement is really going to happen that's going to change the needle to that extent or move the needle to that extent?
Well, if they get Ryan McKenna.
Change the needle was a tough little slogan there, pal.
I tried to bring it back.
Move the needle, but yeah. Yeah. But like if they get Ryan McDonough, suddenly you look at their defense and it looks a little bit better.
Yeah. To the extent, though, that Vegas like adjust the odds so much in their favor. I don't see that happening.
The Leafs are good.
Yeah, exactly. The Leafs have firepower. They got a top 10 penalty kill, close to top 10 power play, mm-hmm. top 5 goalie.
Do you think it's a failure if they lose in the first round to the Tampa Bay Lightning in 7 games?
That's a good question. That sounds like a good quiz question.
In the first round?
Yeah.
No.
Oh, you know that's going to be a quiz question.
No, I don't think it is. It's a good one. I think last year was such a shock that they got there. This is the first year where the expectation is get to the playoffs. Not anything beyond that.
The expectation is they're going to make the playoffs, right?
I don't know if it was a lock. I had them as a playoff team, but I don't think
I think some people thought they might fall back, that typical fall back right. The 1 year you
look at Edmonton right now. Look at Ottawa. Like, that happens. There's turnover.
It's a big failure. We would have looked at, if they missed the playoffs in Toronto, we'd look at it and say failure.
Failure for sure, but making it isn't inconsequential either. I mean, that's a success. You made it, and they're going to make it by a significant margin. They're going to end up with over 100 points. And they've only done that, I think, once in their history.
I think get the franchise record.
I think the difference this year is just going to be emotional from the fans. That last year, the playoffs felt like bonus round.
Yeah.
And that this year, if they lose like that in a tough series, it will be more disappointing that, you know, because these, you know, because what we've seen, the Chicago's sort of winning in that second year mm-hmm. of the Taves Kane or whatever, that you have a feeling they could actually go deep this year. So they lose that way, it will be more, I think, devastating to the fan base here than it was last year, where it was like, that was a fun run, but oh well.
It's always been my philosophy, get a cup in before they get out of their entry-level contracts.
Which would be this year or next year, basically?
Well, I agree with your take there, Duffy, when it comes to comparing to where we were at a year ago with our mentalities. Like, I remember walking out of that rink after the Game 6 loss in overtime thinking, this was a blast. Get me back here. Mm-hmm. Like, so it's almost like all year, like the Raptors in a way. Like, okay, let's get all the way through the regular season. Let's get back to the playoffs so we can start to experience that feeling again. It will be dejecting. I'm not disputing that if they lose in the first round to Tampa. But I think on the reverse end of it, if they were to win a round and then get swept in the second round, it would be an enormous success.
Yeah.
I think people, like, that's probably, you're right on the line. Like, that really is the line. Game seven of the first round. That's probably the total for, like, significant changes in terms of an emotional roller coaster.
I don't know, though. When you say now get swept in the second round, then it feels like there's something really missing from these guys.
But they got through a round. They
won a round. But if you lose in seven, then you can say, oh, we're right there, and Tampa Bay goes on to win the Stanley Cup. But let's say you beat Tampa Bay and then you lose, like, you get swept by Boston. Then you start to go, oh, this is, we're not as close as we
like the
thought.
First round was a fluke.
Yeah, I mean, I know what you're saying, that's anytime you get swept, you start to doubt exactly what you have. It's going to be fascinating. It's going to, it's just, don't you feel like we just got to get there?
Yeah, exactly.
That this last month, I mean, they are chasing now. They're legit in the chase, even though I think it's far-fetched to get second or first. But at least they're in the chase. We can look at the standings every night and say, okay, 3 points behind, two games in hand for the other team. Whatever, so there might be a little bit of a race, but it just feels like the next month is just get us to the playoffs.
Yeah, get going. Let's go. Yeah. Playoffs begin in less than 2 months.
Yeah,
let's get there and let's see what happens.
Do you think Bill Simmons and some people, NBA people, were throwing out this idea of going back to 1 through 16, and the idea of even a play your way in for the last two spots in some sort of tournament? Mm-hmm. Would you like to see that in the National Hockey League?
I don't think what travel teams would just say. Although Detroit had to do it like so many times, mm-hmm. and like when they were in the West, they had to go out to San Jose, and then they would play LA the next round. It would be a gong show.
Yeah, GMs don't want the travel. You're right.
No. I love 1 versus 16.
Yeah,
I love that idea. I don't need the play-in.
At the very least, I want to see back to 1 versus 8, and because I'm tired of the matchups.
Yeah,
Pitt versus Washington. I don't need that in the first round. I don't.
Yeah, I don't think we care enough about that, and I don't think you're creating any of the rivalries they'd hope to. Maybe it takes 10 years for us to feel that, and you get 4 Toronto Boston series. But I'm the same way. There was nothing wrong with 1 versus 8.
Nothing.
Yeah. 1 versus 16 though would open up the possibility for any combination of a cup final, which I think would be incredible. Just a dream. Mm-hmm. Just a dream of Toronto, Montreal in a cup final.
Well, you just potentially get the two best teams, right?
But that's my point. It could be LA Anaheim in a cup final. Could be the Rangers versus the Islanders in a cup. Like, that would be amazing to
you
have.
You definitely
kind
would
of
have to go 2-3-2. Like, I think you could do it. Like, the big problem they have with the travel is 2-2-1-1-1, where you go flying back and forth, back and forth. If you went 2-3-2, like the NBA does that, right?
Yeah, they do that for the finals.
Or no, they went back.
They went back
to
the other
thing?
They
do it the NHL way now.
Do they? Forever? All the way? Because if you went 2-3-2 and you're only talking about a couple of flights in a series, the problem is 2-3-2, I don't know what you want.
That's the thing, right?
Maybe
right?
If you're the better team, you get to pick.
Better team decides if you want the road games or not, yeah, which would be fascinating.
Hmm. All right. Well, Adam Silver opened up that idea this weekend. He did say that he's not going to be a slave to history and, you know, they're going to do whatever makes sense for their league and their business. I like that idea. Like, what do I care that they used to do 1 versus 8 back in the 1940s?
I like to play in, too, although I'd hate it. You could say you can't do that in hockey. They work too hard, but they do it in baseball and you play 162 games, yeah, which is insane. But and those wild card games are, sorry, not the wild card games, the play-in games, what do you call them?
Yeah, wild card games,
they're fantastic, but when it's over, it's just such an empty feeling for those fans.
Oh, it's the worst.
Yeah.
You grind that far, that long into the season, and then you lose in a wild card game. All right, Duffy. Good seeing you, man.
Sens in Nashville tonight.
Can't wait.
Not even on in our region, thank goodness.
Yeah. There's James Duffy joining us on Overdrive, brought to you by Valiant Financial. For fast approvals and competitive payment options on heavy equipment from any dealer, visit valiantfinancial.ca. Brian Stammel will join us from South Korea. Get his take on what's going on over there with the Olympics and maybe a bit of trivia between the O-Dog and Jonas Siegel. This will be epic in the 6 p.m. hour. Overdrive continues on the TSN Go app.